House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:38, and I apologize to everybody. We had a resource meeting that ran over a bit and threw us off schedule, but that's my fault. Anyway, we have one bill on the agenda today, House Bill 9, Private Investigators Agencies. We first heard this bill on February 11th. Being scheduled since then was canceled for one reason or another, several meetings, I believe. Since then, it's been some time since we first heard the bill, so I'm going to ask Ginger Blaisdell and the sponsor to, probably Ginger, to give us an update of the original bill. Following the recap, I would like the committee to considering to adopt the draft CS version 2, which is in their packets, but she'll be working off the first bill. Welcome back, Ginger. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. My name is Ginger Blaisdell. I'm staff to Representative Hughes. And so at this point, you want me to run through version A
yeah.
of the bill? Okay. And you want me to reflect the changes that we're recommending to the CS?
You want or to do it all at once? Go for it. Whatever works out for you. And just keep it so we can all understand it.
Yes.
Including the people that are probably listening.
Right. Okay. Oh, the piece of paper I needed I set aside. Okay.
You know what? Do it off the original. And we'll let you do the changes after we bring the CS before us. Still brain dead from last night.
Okay, so we're going to go through version A with, and we'll not discuss any changes. Correct?
Not for a few minutes at least.
Okay.
Oh, I kind of missed something. Today is Friday, April or March 13th, and I think that reflected in the fact that I overlooked announcing that we do have a quorum, and we do have Representative Ledoux, Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Josephson, Representative Culver, and myself, Carol Olson, here physically at least. I mean, with respect to myself.
We feel the same.
And we do have a quorum to conduct business. We have one other representative that may be joining us later on that had a different commitment.
Okay.
Please continue, Ginger.
All right, thank you. So version A was the first draft attempt of providing a professional licensure requirement for private investigators. It was a compilation of information. A similar bill was heard last year in this committee, and that committee did make some changes to it. And that was kind of the starting point of where version A was introduced this year. So the first thing that we did is section one required that the private investigator job class, I guess you could call it, would be considered in the list of professional licensure. That's a little bit elevated from just getting a standard business license to do business. In version A, a private investigator, there were two classifications. One was an investigator as an individual person, and there was a private investigator agency that was slightly different. Scope of practice talks about the kinds of things that a private investigator does. So they might investigate criminal offenses. They look at the identity and the habits of individuals. They basically do surveillance-type activities. And they can work for a variety of people. They don't work for just one entity. So they might be contracted by the public. They might be contracted by other companies. But they have the opportunity to work for anybody. General requirements were that you needed to be a citizen of the United States, not have a felony within the last 10 years, not be convicted by another jurisdiction of a crime of moral turpitude or sexual misconduct. And moral turpitude includes things like murder, rape. There's a statutory definition that says what crimes of moral turpitude are. So they're fairly egregious. They can't be on probation or parole. Oh, thank you. They cannot be declared by the court of being incompetent, meaning that they cannot do the work. So they might have some kind of an illness or something that precludes them from doing that. And we also had something that said they could not be currently employed as a peace officer. They couldn't be in the agency of the United States doing investigative type work. And then if the department determined that it would represent a conflict of interest. And something like that might be someone being a private investigator, maybe also being like an insurance claim. You know, the person that investigates situations for an insurance agency. They shouldn't be doing investigations for one and investigations on their own. We originally had two different classes of licenses. We had one that was a more professional class and one that was paraprofessional. So we had an A and a B. It required slightly different levels of education. The license application itself, we actually lined out all of the identifying characteristics we wanted to see in the license. You'll see that that's been changed somewhat. It did require fingerprints so that you would go through the National Criminal History background check. We still will be requiring that. There was a section, investigation of applicants, where the department would actually do kind of an investigation on this professional class of people so that they would have the opportunity to really go in and see if they are maybe have, I guess what you call maybe a hidden agenda or a different agenda, and maybe should not be awarded the privilege of being a private investigator. Reciprocity allowed the department to grant a private investigator license in Alaska if they were already a private investigator in another jurisdiction, so like another state. License cards, you would actually receive a professional license card, like an ID card, as a private investigator. We had an agency certificate, so we had some bonding and liability issues attached to an agency certificate. The license renewal was non-transferable. We're still maintaining that. We don't believe that a professional license should be able to be transferred to another individual in the off chance that they may not qualify to be a private investigator. Firearms training was added last year by this committee, different membership, but it was added by this committee. So there was firearms training, which basically meant anyone in Alaska can have concealed carry. But for this particular circumstance, because of the nature of the work, we felt that the person should go through a firearm training course of some sort, whether they carry a firearm or not. If they were going to carry a firearm, we would hope that they would have a little bit of training. Confidentiality of a licensee's personal identifying information. That has proven to be a little bit more complicated for the Division of Business Licensing to try and make one profession have some confidential information. They'd have to do a lot of computer programming to isolate those individuals. Prohibited practices. This particular section allows the department to be able to impose disciplinary sanctions. And so there's really no meat to having a profession if there's no way to either revoke a license or create a situation where they can actually enforce a fine on someone if they're doing something inappropriate. So prohibited practices clearly identifies for what circumstance the department might be able to award a fine to somebody. I guess you'd call it an award. Immunity for complainants. This was a lawsuit issue. Administrative Procedure Act allows the department to create regulations for this particular profession. Exemptions. It's a very long list of exemptions, and these are all the people that would not have to obtain a professional private investigator license. And I can go through each one of those kind of job classes.
Don't bother, and I'm not going to ask you to do the fiscal note as well, but I'll get to that later when we...
Okay. Definitions talks about who is a commissioner, who is the department. The transitional provisions, basically say that you are grandfathered in until you have to renew your license and you have to follow the rules. It gives the department the opportunity to get the regs in place, get the rules out there. And then in the old bill, the act would take effect July 1, 2015. So that is the old version.
Okay, any questions for Ginger on the old version? At this point in time, I'd like the request of the committee dig out version H, which is the new draft CS. And so we're going to adopt the, yeah. And I would entertain a motion to adopt the CS as working document.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move CSH 9 version / H.
I will object for purposes of discussion. And I might add the changes that are reflected in this do make some significant changes. That's the good news. We got it yesterday in time, but by the time we got it out to the stakeholders, I think they're going to have the weekend at least to review it before we take any action on it. But I would like to go on the record to say that as a sponsor, and Ms. Blaisdell did make some significant changes. And what I'm leading into is that we will, if we adopt the CS, after we get done reviewing it, we will be able to get a new fiscal note. I have no idea what that is, but I think it will make some changes in it, but we can't do it until we have adopted it. So the process is a bit long. But anyway, Ginger, you want to walk us through the new version?
Yes.
Or the changes specifically?
Yes. And this is Ginger Blaisdell, staff to Representative Hughes. So version H, like Howard. What I'll do is highlight specifically what some of the changes were, and I'll try
but
to
But I believe we have a redlined copy of it that's gone out to the members as well, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a redlined copy of version A, and it should match fairly closely to H. However, I didn't repeat word for word all of the changes in H. In
you
a
think over the weekend you could do a side-by-side of the changes? I think it would make it easier both on the committee and the stakeholders. And
Yes.
We're going to be here all weekend, so the sooner you get it out to Conrad, the sooner we'll get it out to everybody else.
Sure. Okay, so page one on version H. The first change that you'll see is a slight change in the title of the bill, and it just matches some of the changes that we made throughout the bill. Section 1 remains the same, and what Section 1 does is it adds the regulation of private investigators to the professional licensure class of jobs rather than just a standard business license. So starting on page 9 of line 1, we removed the references to private investigator agencies. So now you are just a private investigator, whether you work with a group of people, whether you hire people, or whether you work independently. A private investigator is an individual person who is licensed to be a private investigator. The scope of practice, which is at the top of page 2, 3, this stayed exactly the same except on line 18, where it says a license entitles an individual to operate a private investigator agency as an individual, a partner, a chief executive officer of a corporation. So this is where that agency aspect would come in, even though each individual who is actually doing the surveillance operation or acting as a private investigator would need to be licensed. But it does not mean that an agency has to have a separate license. On page 2, starting at line 20, general requirements for private investigators. We received some questions and some concerns, one of which was about the definition of moral turpitude. And the way the the version A was written, it looked as though the Department of Commerce would have the ability to kind of interpret and make the determination on moral turpitude. Moral turpitude is actually defined in statute, but we decided to go ahead and remove that because most of the crimes of moral turpitude would probably fall under Section 2, which is if you've been convicted of a felony. And so that's, we kind of left it saying that moral turpitude would follow under that felony provision. We did leave in if you were convicted of a crime that is a sex offense, and then we did leave the definition for a sex offense in here. That tends to be a very sensitive area of sex offenders being able to access personal information. We still have that you cannot be a private... Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Roseanne, just throw something at me.
I'll remember that the next time.
Something's wrong.
So you're just basically... There's no definition of moral turpitude, but instead you're just saying for felonies? Well, aren't there crimes that may be misdemeanors that involve dishonesty that you'd want to include in there, but they might not be felonies?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. That's part of the reason that we did put crimes of moral turpitude in the original version of the bill. But the outcry from the public that's contacted our office really were very disconcerted about having that language in the bill. So it might be something for the committee to consider.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Yeah, on that point, I mean, through the chair, Ms. Blaisdell, one of my concerns with this bill from the outset was that it was just too much in just about every respect. But Representative Ledoux makes a good point. Crimes of dishonesty are impeachable in court, and a client might want to know whether a private investigator who acted as a witness in court was impeachable, essentially. So... I think that could be an important point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So continuing on page 2, the general requirements. Number 5, may not have been declared by a court to be mentally incompetent. So we didn't want that. One thing. Oh, let me just check. One item that was removed from the first version was that a person who may have been dishonorably discharged from the armed forces of the United States. Originally, we put that person should not be in this particular professional job class. After investigating it further, looking into this further, it was recommended that the use of dishonorable discharge has changed over the years. And so coming out of the Vietnam War particularly, those were fairly egregious crimes that somebody may have committed while they were in the armed forces. Now some of those honorable discharges have become more, could be alcoholism related, it could be a PTSD type of a thing. And so we felt that maybe that shouldn't disqualify them from this particular professional job class. So that's been removed. We also removed a section where it said they may not be currently employed in some of these other jobs. The reason that was removed is because we felt that if you were a peace officer, if you were an agent, if you worked for an agent of the United States, say you were in the FBI or in the... maybe in the armed forces, that if you were doing law enforcement or investigative services for them, more than likely you've signed some kind of a waiver or something that says that you have another job, you have another business, and so you would be identified as having a conflict through that other job. So we're going to let them kind of monitor that. And then we also removed the line that said, if you held a position that the department determined to represent a conflict of interest. And that just left an awful lot of discretion to the department, and we just decided to remove it altogether. And so that's general requirements. The private investigator license. We also trimmed this down, and so starting at the very first line on line 3, the department can issue an investigator license to an individual who is at least 21 years old. They pay the fee. And then this is due to quickly asking for a revised version of a bill. This is an edit that was missed. And so what I would probably recommend to the committee is to consider removing lines 5 through lines 20 on page 3. That was an education requirement that was that originally had been under the Class A and Class B type licensure. So that particular education requirement would be gone. And so at this point, you would be able to get a private investigator license if you were 21, paid the fee, and then in the application process, there are some other requirements, such as the background check. The very next section on page 3, starting with line 21, is called the license application. And this one, instead of listing every single piece of identifying information that we felt might be appropriate for a private investigator, we just say that it's submitted on an application to the department on a form and in a manner determined by the department. So they can choose what kind of application form and the information that should be requested.
I believe there are at least 3 political jurisdictions in the state that have it. I think Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. Nope.
Chairman, actually what I found is that the city of Fairbanks licenses, the city of Anchorage licenses, Juneau does not. And those are the only 2 that I know.
Oh. May I?
Quickly.
It's on the books in Kenai. They haven't enforced it.
Oh, okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so the second part of a license application is that on the application, the applicant actually has to sign the bottom saying that the information on here is true. What that does is instead of having the department try to verify that all the information is true and accurate, we're taking their word for it. And so if something comes up that maybe the information on their application was not true, it's a whole different type of an offense. And then with the application, fingerprints and fees to do a National History criminal background check. The fingerprints and fees were also a question.
Representative Ledoux.
Do they sign under penalty of perjury that everything's true, or just their signature?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that's certainly something that could be added to the bill. I tried to make the bill as simple as possible.
What page are we on right now?
Page 3, line 24 and 25.
Version H.
On the red line.
Oh, my red
line.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not on. It's on the red line.
It's on page 5, line 22.
Thank you.
Sorry.
All right. So I'll continue on. One of the other things that we did take out of the version A was a notarized signature. So originally we wanted individuals who were applying for this to be able to show some identification, so when they sent their application form into the department, there was at least a physical assurance that the person filling out the form was the person asking for the information. We got rid of the notary signature. We felt that if we were going to go with the honesty of the applicant, that we didn't need the honesty of a notary as well. So that was one thing removed. There was a question regarding fingerprints. And so I looked up the screening process and the law that applies to fingerprinting. the reason that you have to send your fingerprints in each time, and an individual had asked me, why do I have to send my fingerprints, because my fingerprints don't change. But the person submitting the information could change, and so that's why a new set of fingerprints is required each time. The fingerprint is the only source of identification of an individual other than DNA or biometrics. The National Identification Index holds fingerprints. It does not hold DNA for individuals. It does not hold iris scans or other kinds of biometrics at this point. And so the fingerprint can identify if there are other aliases. So if you've gone on other, if you used other names in your life, and it is part of the interstate compact. So it's the sole identification of an individual. So each time you apply, you would have to be fingerprinted.
Representative Ledoux.
You say each time you apply, does that mean for renewals too?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, in just a moment, it will describe that once every 10 years, the department may ask you to submit new fingerprints to have a new criminal history background check done. So once every 10 years. You can have multiple renewals within that 10-year period.
I don't think that's standard. I know I held a number of insurance licenses and non-resident licenses in two states, and at least four Alaska ones, and one set did it for the state of Washington, California, and Texas, and Alaska. That must be something new, or where did you, was this something you came up with, or something you found someplace else?
Chairman, this was something that we saw, I think it was, I don't remember which state. It was not Colorado. I think it may have been California, or it may have been Oregon, where they required a background check every third application renewal, just to make sure they weren't doing something in a different state that they may not be aware of.
I don't even think the Bar Association does that, do they?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think that when I was first admitted to the bar, then I submitted one set of fingerprints, and then you renew each year, but that's been it for fingerprints.
Please continue.
Okay. Continuing on to page 4 of version H, we do require two photographs of the applicant. And the photographs, while we're not requiring an actual photo ID, having the photographs on file in case there is a question or if the department is having to conduct an investigation to see who the person may be, or in regulation, they may actually decide they would like to make sure someone is issued a private investigator ID card. So that would be up to regulation. But we do continue to ask for two photographs. So one question that might resolve part of your question, Representative Ledoux, on starting on line 5 of page 4, the department shall require that an application for license issued in this chapter is submitted with notice that false statements made are punishable as unsworn falsification in the second degree under AS 1156-210. I don't know if that would satisfy your concern about being punishable. So,
but the record reflect, Representative Ledoux shook her head, yes, mm-hmm. In the affirmative.
Okay. So page 4,
it wasn't necessarily a concern, really. I just wanted to know the answer to the question.
Okay. Some of the things that we removed from the application process, we removed the letters of recommendations. So that should alleviate a lot of time needed by the department. We remove documentation to substantiate that the applicant meets the requirement. So we've removed some of the more time-consuming efforts that the department may have had to have done. We also removed that the department should conduct an actual investigation to determine whether the facts are correct. So now we're taking the applicant at their word, and then remove the notary signature. So a number of items have been removed to simplify the application process. Okay. So page 4, line 8, a private investigator agency, unlawful practice. So you may operate an agency if you hold a license, if you carry a policy of insurance or a surety bond or another form of security for not less than $15,000. That's fairly standard business. It doesn't mean you have to carry two things, three things. You just need to have some sort of a surety bond against with your business. And then the other thing that we changed is that a person who knowingly violates this section is guilty of a violation. Originally, we had they would be guilty of a misdemeanor, and there was a lot of public outcry saying professions should not have misdemeanors, and we also found out some professions actually have felonies if you're behaving inappropriately. So this one is just a violation punishable under AS 1255, and that's fairly broad, so it could be a real small violation. It could be something more significant.
Representative Ledoux.
And so I'm trying to follow this. So if somebody is operating a private investigator agency without either A, being licensed, or B, having the policy of insurance, then it's a violation?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, the department could say this is a violation of this professional licensure. It's similar to being licensed and bonded, like other professions.
So if somebody doesn't hold a license at all and operates as a private investigator, then they would be guilty of a violation. And
follow-up or new question?
Follow-up, sorry. So what's the punishment provided in AS 1255?
We have. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. 1255 is very open. It's the Code of Criminal Procedure, and it's includes sentencing and probation. And there's a wide variety of punishments in here. And so that level of punishment would probably be decided in regulation by the department. And part of that also was at the request of the outcry that people really felt that misdemeanors and having actual criminal fines for not operating a private investigator business. But one piece of...
Good question. Excuse me. What's the highest fine that it could be?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, at this point we're leaving that to the discretion of regulation.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson?
No.
How come?
How come?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a violation is, it's also called an infraction. It's usually a few hundred dollars at the most. But I suppose it could vary. I don't know.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson and Amadou, one of the items that was provided in the packet is this list that came from the Division of Corporations and Professional Licensing. And it lists every profession that has a misdemeanor, and some of them actually have felony violations for being in violation of their profession. So there are five pages of professions that do have specific, more than a violation. It's actual misdemeanor or felony. We removed that, the strength of the language, because again of the outcry from the public, and because a regulation process would go through a public review, some of those may become misdemeanor, like a Class A misdemeanor like we had before. That would be up to that particular public process.
Follow?
Just a
comment?
Yes, a comment. I'd like to come in. Ms. Blaisdell and Representative Hughes, this is the very kind of thing that is useful to me, because I was concerned about the penalties, and now I have a comparison, and that's useful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Please continue.
Okay. So, still on version H, page 4, starting on line 15, is license renewal and non-transferability. This language is the same as in version A, with the exception on line 30, where it says that the department may, actually it starts on line 27, the department could require a licensee to submit a new set of fingerprints in those 10 years. That might be a place, after your last discussion, that might be a place where you would like to see a change in the bill. Okay. Page 5, the prohibited practices. Let me just confirm. I don't think I changed anything here. Okay, so prohibited practices. This one remained basically the same as in version A. So this allows the department to be able to sanction a private investigator in some way. So they actually have the authority. Normally for some professions there's a board established, and the board would then have the powers to sanction. In this particular instance, we didn't want to create a board. We're allowing the department to assume the responsibilities where a board otherwise would have done that. Okay. Like I said before, we removed firearms training. We removed confidentiality of a licensee's information. We removed immunity for complainants. And so that brings us right to administrative procedures. That remains the same. That allows the department to implement regulations and follow the bill. And then line 11, starting on page 6, is something called exemptions. And this was one that a number of people were concerned about because they didn't understand why these folks wouldn't have to become a professional licensed private investigator, where some of the work, it looks like they're doing the same thing that a private investigator does. And I can quickly run through the differences between what these people do. So number one starts on line 13. This refers to a human resource department where they reference criminal history, education, Facebook, investigating complaints. All of this is done within the affairs of that employer. So they can look at people applying for a job with that employer. They can look at their own internal staff. But it's only with the affairs of the employer. It is not to the public. Number two is an officer of the United States, political subdivision. This one would be something like public safety, the Police Standards Council, where they have a statutory duty to investigate the authority or duty of their department. So, and again, they are not offering services to the public. Number three is a person engaged exclusively in the business of obtaining financial information. This is anyone who offers a loan, credit services, and it's financial information only. They cannot look up anything else. Number four is an attorney. Obviously, they're going to do some investigating. They are licensed, and they have some, not an oath of office, it's an ethics that they follow. And so they do have additional licensing requirements. A licensed collection agency, they are licensed only for collections. And so this really is for a particular purpose and a solicit of collections. That's the only thing that they can investigate, is to solicit for collections. Number six, these are your claims adjusters. They are investigating the facts of an incident. They are not investigating the general public. Number seven, employee of a bank. Again, this is within the scope of their employment. Again, not working for the public, working only for the bank. Number eight, again, this is an insurance adjuster. This is only working within the scope of their license, so if they breached their own license, they would lose their license, and they are not a private investigator. Number nine is doing something, it's repo work. It's for the owner of the debt if the debtor does not pay. It's part of the Security Act, and it's under the Uniform Commercial Code. So they're already covered. 10 is a forensic scientist. They're basically assembling facts to support an opinion. They're not investigating behavior. They are simply providing information to be an expert opinion. Number 11 is if you're gathering information from other public records. So kind of what I did when I was looking for private investigators in this state. So this person might use things like court view. They might do a public records request of the legislature. They can Google, but they are not offering services beyond what the public can do themselves. So that would not be a private investigator. Number 12, solely engaged in the business of pre-employment. This is a human resources, it could be a contractor, it could be an agent of a human resource company. They are not surveilling people. This could be somebody doing lie detector screenings or fingerprints only. Again, they're not surveilling people, they're just gathering data. Number 13, news media. We hope they do a lot of research before they write a story. Number 14, this is a person from another jurisdiction. So it could be someone coming into Alaska from another state doing a specific incident review or, you know, maybe it's an insurance claim. And one of the key items to notice is that on item number B, which is page 7, line 21, they act as a private investigator in the state for less than 30 days in a calendar year. So they might come up for 2 weeks at one point, they might come up for 1 week, but 30 days in the whole calendar year. If they extend 30 days, they need to get a private investigator license in Alaska. 15, a process server. They are licensed and they follow the rules of the court. No surveilling going on there. 16 is a paralegal, and again, the attorney is held liable for what their paralegal is doing. 17 is doing genealogical research. And 18 is a person likely to be employed by another, and it's strictly fact-finding again. So if you did not exempt these people, most businesses would shut down or everyone would be professional private investigators. So that's why these particular exemptions are still in statute. The key difference is that a private investigator can work for multiple entities rather than just one employer, and they can conduct surveillance. Those are the two key items that separate them from all of these exempt positions.
I think this bill is improved, but through the chair, Ms. Blaisdell, there are a couple things here. You talked about the right to surveil. I don't know to what extent one would encroach into, I think it's 1866, which is the stalking section of the code. Well, stalking is actually in Title 11, but the restraining order section is in Title 18. So that would be something I would give some thought to. And the other thing, relative to subsection 15 on the exemptions, the private process server, those folks do surveil. They certainly park and wait for someone to come. And they could wait a very long time if instructed to do so. The other thing, if I may,
sure.
You said, you talked about differentiating where someone could do something themselves. I'm not sure whether that's exactly the test, because a lot of what a private investigator can do, a person could do themselves. For example, in this state, you can record a conversation unless it's unless it's law enforcement doing it. You can record private conversations.
One party has to be aware of it.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But I would agree, just as a comment, that you do need to exempt these people because you would incur the wrath of a lot of different groups if you didn't. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Please continue. It looks like we're almost done.
We are almost there. All right. Page 8, line 6, definition section did not change. Page 8, line 13 is a new section, and this is, it's called licensing of private investigators, and this is a section that is common in other professional licenses. This is the authority, gives the authority to license private investigators is reserved to the state, except as specifically provided in statute, so municipalities cannot enforce the licensure of private investigators. And so what this means is that once you're a private investigator in Alaska, you can conduct business anywhere in the state, where right now if you were in one city that didn't have a licensure program, you may not have to have any kind of license with that particular municipality. If you work in Anchorage, you would pay their fee, go through their background check. If you work in Fairbanks, you would pay their fee, do their background check. We're saying one license fits all at this point. And then the last change that we made is in the transitional provisions. We did change the date from July 1, 2015 to July 1, 2016, and that was at the request of the department so that they would have time to implement regulations and set up the right cycle for this professional job class to circulate through the application process and be approved. Just as a kind of a quick note, one thing that we found is that right now in the state of Alaska, a person who obtains a business license, and this may or may not be an appropriate use for a business license, but it is a license that says maybe investigative services as your job class. Individuals who have that business license for investigative services, it's a state-issued license, and it gives you access to 70 or 80% of all the private databases that are available to only people who are licensed as investigators. With no background check, no kind of empowerment for the department to do anything about investigators, they can access a lot of private information that otherwise would not be available to the public. So, for example, a $50 business license, pay a $10 fee to gain access to a certain database. You might be able to get in and look up people's DMV information. That could include any driving infraction. It could include who your insurance carrier is, who has the lien on your vehicle, what your physical address is, and maybe in some people's databases, even what your picture looks like. So,
if the other committee members, if this doesn't provoke some thoughts in their minds, I'd be surprised. Through the chair, Ms. Blaisdell, are you saying that that's something that can be done now?
Through the chair, yes, right now, today.
And as a follow-up, this bill wouldn't change any of that, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, what this bill would do is it would require you to at least go through a background check, and there would be a professional license fee associated with it. I don't know what the fiscal note's going to look like, but hopefully it would deter someone from saying, $50 and I get in. Maybe they won't be quite as eager to get into some of these private databases and obtain personal information.
Several things. Can you show me the section that would preclude me from, in case anyone is wondering how I spend my time, I mean, I look at CourtView routinely.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure I want to opt in to depriving 700,000 Alaskans of the right to look at things they presently can. Is that what this bill does?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. No, this would not preclude you from any public databases right now. What this bill does is it requires a little bit more of a process to get a professional investigator's license. Therefore, that license would now be the access point into private databases. It's the private databases that they can access now with a simple business license and no other requirement.
And again, could, if this became law with the governor's signature, could someone still, you're saying that someone could no longer pay $50 plus $10 and access those databases?
Through the chair, with this particular bill, a person would have to go through a background check. So besides a fee associated, hopefully we would be able to weed out anyone who might have some kind of poor behavior in their recent history. They would then have to apply with the department. Department would award them a private investigator professional license, and that would then be their access point. So if you are truly interested in getting into private databases, you could simply go through that process, which is a little bit more egregious than just filling out a form, paying $50, and you get a business license. That's the only deterrent.
I think what the answer to my question is yes. That
I think
a person could no longer do that. They'd have to effectively become a private investigator.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes.
Okay. Representative Ledoux.
I'm so confused right now. So what do you mean by, I've got a number of questions, or follow-ups. Okay.
Do them right in order.
Okay. So what private databases are you talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. One of them, probably one of the easiest ones to gain access to, is the Department of Motor Vehicles. So my understanding is that it's a $10 fee to be able to access that. The access criteria is a license by the state that shows that you're an investigator. So when you get your business license, it says investigative services, it has the name of your business, and there's a business license number on it. They can show through a date, you know, usually it's all done electronic, so they can't actually see the person.
Why are you saying that that's a private database? It sounds like it's a state database, through the chair.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that the general public cannot query DMV and get all of the same information that you can through other private access points.
New question?
Yeah, I actually like to talk to somebody from DMV, but I don't think anybody...
Actually, it's my intention not to take any action on the bill today, but I think you're about wrapped up, aren't you, Ginger? Representative Hughes.
Yeah, I've been very quiet listening, and I'll just pipe in here. I think the word private doesn't have to do with private public. It has to do with personal information that wouldn't be available otherwise. So that is the meaning of the word private. It's, you know, we can all go on and we can do searches, and there's quite a bit that you can do just as the public. But this reaches into another layer that normally you wouldn't do unless you are a private investigator. And then to, if I may, Mr. Chair, to represent Josephson's question, as far as the people that can do it now, essentially you wouldn't have to become a private investigator to continue to do it if this bill were to be passed, but you'd have to become licensed as one, which, I mean, I suppose that's technically you're becoming one, but you wouldn't really have to operate a practice. And that is my concern, especially in this day and age when there is a lot of information out there in this electronic age, and the protection of personal privacy is important. And, you know, we did learn that there were some people where their personal privacy was invaded, and just felt like this protection for Alaskans is important. And I will say, just as far as this process, we've gotten a lot of feedback and made a lot of changes based on the input that we had. And there are a lot of good private investigators out there, and they're doing good work, and they're helping Alaskans. And I believe that doing this, in no way am I trying to prohibit the keep people out or make it difficult, and hopefully we can get the fiscal note down to a reasonable amount. But it's really to shore up the profession to be more credible and to have the respect that it should have, and at the same time that Alaskans will know they are protected. And I would like to comment about the fiscal note, but I could do that later, or if you want me to do it now. Or
what I would like to do is get to public testimony. We've had people that have been stalled on several occasions, and my plan is that Representative Ledoux will ask a real quick question. But
I'm not quite sure who to address this to, but I think that there may be a problem beyond this bill if the DMV is giving out private information to, regardless of whether somebody is saying they're a private investigator or not. But that might be another bill.
Another battle. You done, Ginger?
I'm sure. Yes. Yeah. So, real quick wrap up. One thing that I did that normally I probably wouldn't do on other pieces of legislation is I did receive a copy of the Anchorage licensed private investigators. I got their list of about 46 people. I asked what the financial impact would be to the municipality of Anchorage if they were no longer licensing. It's $4,600 a year. So that's the total impact to the city of Anchorage or Muni of Anchorage. Fairbanks had 17 people on their list. Their impact, they charge a little bit more than Anchorage does. They charge $400 for a two-year license. They said between the two-year and some years are bigger and some years are less, it's maybe $2,000 a year impact to the city of Fairbanks. Fairbanks has had zero investigations on private investigators. Anchorage thought there might have been one about 10 years ago, and they just referred it to the police, and so the police followed up. As far as Representative Josephson, your concern about stalking and those kinds of things, that is where it got turned over to the police, was an event like that. I did also receive the list of all the professions that were listed under investigative services with the department, 96 people, and I found that many of them did a variety of other jobs, so this really might weed it out. The end is that I probably found maybe 50 people in the state of Alaska who do investigative type work, and maybe 50 people out of state, of which maybe half of them are doing what they call state stacking. So you can put on your website, you know, we're licensed in 39 states to do investigative services, but really there's no person here in Alaska. So it's a fairly small group of people, but it's a very important group of people for public private or for public protection. So that's it.
Can I ask one more thing?
Yeah.
Are we here largely because of the case involving the kidnapped barista? Is that what prompted this?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that was certainly an eye-opener. But there are events going on even now today that are maybe not as publicly egregious, but certainly that don't support public safety. And that's really what we're looking at, is to improve public safety for Alaskans.
I will remove my objection to adopting the version H. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, we will adopt version H as the version. And with that, what I plan on doing is opening up public testimony. We've got a number of people. I'm going to be limiting it to 3 minutes for those of you that are listening. And to the current version that we just adopted, which is version H, which is significantly different. We're not moving the bill today. With that, I will open up public testimony, and we will start out with Steve Christopher. Are you with us, Steve? Nope, Steve's not with us. Bill?
I'm here, Mr. Chair.
Is this Steve?
I'm here.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today. And we're on version H, the short form.
Mr. Chair, okay. My name is Steve Christopher. I'm with Investigative Services of Alaska.
Please continue.
Okay, Mr. Chair and the representatives, I guess I wanted to first start off, since I got 3 minutes, is the public safety remark. There's current laws on the books that protect the public from private investigators and normal individuals. For example, in the situation with the barista, that's fraud. There's criminal and civil penalties that can regulate that to prevent that or to react to it if it happens. The second thing with the impersonation of a police officer, the state of Alaska prosecutes this. There's a case that just happened a few months ago in Fairbanks where they caught an individual that was given the appearance of law enforcement. So there's current statutes that are protecting the public from people trying to impersonate a peace officer. As far as the private investigators getting to do access to databases, with today's age, a private person could get on the same databases as a private investigator. MOTSNIC is where the DMV information comes into play. Anybody can pay the fee and join MOTSNIC. You're not required to have a private investigator license. With that, you get the DMV information, but all you get is the name of the individual that the car is registered to and the lien holder. It's not like it's coming up with this person's dossier of where they go, where they shop, or anything else. It's just basic information. As far as the exemptions, the one concern I have with the exemptions is, just take example number 14. What that does is promote out-of-state hire. So we all have a growing rate up here, and that rate is significantly higher than the lower 48. And the lower 48 investigations are going for $15 to $20 an hour. Where up here, it's an average of $50 to $100. So these insurance companies are going to be hiring the people in the lower 48. It's going to be cheaper to fly them up here, have them conduct the investigation, and then they avoid the licensing process. If I go down in the lower 48, I still have to pay a fee to practice. Even if I get a waiver, you still have to pay the fee. And that's not how it looks like if a person comes up to Anchorage. So it's kind of like in the guise of public safety, you're also inhibiting work for investigators in Alaska. Again, many of the background sites, the representatives can go on themselves. You can pay the fee, get whatever information you want, and it's equal to what a private investigator is going to get. The only ones that are different is like LexisNexis law enforcement, but you have to have a special clearance for that, where many of us here, they can't even get access to that. So there is safeguards in place by the database companies to prevent a person of less than morals to get a hold of a person's information. The fingerprints, I think I've engaged that enough in the letters of opposition that I've sent in. And as far as the photos and ID cards, and I will address that some of the felonies that's been mentioned about for violations in the occupation field also deal with fish and game. There's nothing that I've found in the normal other practice of occupations where it would be Class A or felony charges. And that's all I have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for joining us. Bill Parley, are you with us? McHenry? Please say your name and affiliation, and thank you for taking the time to participate. And we're talking about the new version of the bill, which had some changes.
My name is Wade. I'm sorry.
Oh, please say your name and affiliation for the record, and you've got our undivided attention.
My name is William Pauley. I own McHenry Detective Agency, which was established in 1975. Mike McHenry operated it for 18 years, and then I purchased it from him in 1993 and have been active in the business for 22 years. I'm 69 years old, and as I look in the room behind me, there's about seven or eight people in here. There's a lot of gray-haired people. It's basically the private investigating business now is basically made up of part-time investigators. The investigating business is nowhere near what it used to be, for instance, in the 1990s. One of the things that I have an issue, and I would like to say while I'm up here that I back everything that Steve just previously testified to 100%. He is entirely accurate about everything that he testified to. My issues come primarily in what an investigator is. And I went through the ACS yellow pages and went through all of the 29 listings of private investigators and private detectives and called every one of those numbers. of the 29 numbers listed in last year's June 2014 ACS Yellow Pages. Out of the 29 listings, there were 13 numbers that was disconnected. And of the people I spoke to, I tried to call people for like 2 weeks, left messages, sent emails. Of the people I was able to contact that came back to me, I had been identified 7 private investigators that are currently in Anchorage that are working as private investigators, and there's probably only 2 of those that are active full-time and not basically retired. One of the issues that I have, and I think the state ought to take a real close look at this, is under state law, under the Department of Labor, the classification between whether there's contract labor or whether it's an employee. And what I see is that some of the attorney firms in town are hiring private investigators, what they're calling private investigators. However, under the laws that I just referenced, Department of Labor, there are 3 main sections here which distinguish the difference between a private contractor and an employee. In the first of the 3 areas here, there's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 paragraphs in the one section, the first section of the 3 sections, and I'd like to read that first paragraph. Control is exercised when workers are totally dependent upon the employer economically. The employer exercises the necessary control of the employee through monetary funds. For an example, a worker who performs services primarily for one company would be economically dependent upon that company. Therefore, any private investigators who are calling themselves private investigators and is working for 1 or 2 law firms is technically not a private investigator. He is technically not a independent contractor, but he is an employee, and that's what this committee needs to look at. So basically, I feel like this is basically a tempest in a teapot. In Anchorage, there's probably literally 5 or 6 people that's working full time at this, and maybe.
Could you wrap it up, Bill, please?
I'm sorry.
Well, could you wrap it up, please? We've got probably 5, 6 yes. more people. I'm taking you don't like the new version, is what I'm guessing.
There's probably less than 10 full time investigators in the state of Alaska. And I'll wrap it up unless there's some questions.
Thanks again, Bill, for joining us today. It appears to be a relatively slow process. We're going to be waiting on another fiscal note to see if there's any impact. Anyway, thanks again. Robert Shaw, are you with us?
Good afternoon, Chairman.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Name is Robert Shaw. I represent a company called Robert Shaw Agency. I've been licensed in Alaska and with the municipality since 1996. And before then, I worked in this field for 20 years. In the lower 48, including overseas. I would just like to point out a very simple fact. I know it's taken a lot of time and energy and a lot of diligence to put a package together as you have here regarding the bill that you have presented to us. The real issue is I don't understand why we would make such a big production for such a few amount of people that are involved in this licensing. My real concern is more about the investigative services that are billed out through law firms with their secretaries, and I don't think there's any investigative services that goes beyond the billing part of it, meaning we're dealing here with fraudulent investigative services that really have nothing to do with the private investigator here. I think this committee should look more into the lawyers that operate under these conditions, because if we were really technically working as private investigators without all the corruption that's going on, the fraudulent billing from the law firms, I think we could make a decent living. But as it stands, as you can see behind me, there's probably only about a half a dozen people in this room that even bothered to show up, because if there's another half a dozen of us out there, they're busy trying to make a living. Other than that, I really don't have much to say for this bill, other than I think you should reconsider putting this bill together in the format that you have. Do you have any questions for me? Otherwise, I think I've concluded what I have to say.
Thanks again. James Hoffer?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name and affiliation.
My name is James Hofer. I run JPH Enterprises, private detective agency out of Anchorage, Alaska. A little background on myself. I grew up in California. I've been in Alaska for about 13 years now. I studied criminal justice and psychology at UC Irvine. After doing some work up here, when I decided to move, I wanted to start my own business. And I've always been interested in the law and the legalities of investigation. And that's what I've put my mind to for the last 7 years or so. I've been a licensed private detective agency for the last 3.5. I still have another year left on my 2-year license. This bill is very concerning to me because, as someone who moved to Alaska that calls Alaska my home now, I pride myself in doing good work for the attorneys I work for and the private citizens. With this bill being put forward, it sounds like there's been some kind of taint on the type of work we do. What Ms. Blaisdell, what I heard her say, I believe, was in Fairbanks there was 17 licensed investigators that she could locate or that she spoke with, and she said there was 0 incidents in Fairbanks with complaints, that type of thing. She said Anchorage there was 46. There's been one complaint in the last 10 years that was referred to the police department and was taken care of that way. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of public safety and concern issues here for our profession. Being a new person to this industry and the state, I feel that the investigators that are doing good work out there, that are helping the public, that work for the attorneys and help the defense side or help private citizens when they're trying to locate relatives or find long-lost loved ones or other things like infidelity or other civil situations, workers' comp, things like that, we're not getting a fair shake here, and I think this bill is really overkill. Like the gentleman before me said, you guys put a lot of time and effort into this. I just think the time and effort could be used on something more important than trying to regulate private detectives or private investigators here in the state when there really has been no instances or complaints or anything. I think the whole premise for bringing this bill forward, even the prior bill, HB 253, that was last year, I think it's just a mistake at this point in time. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
Thanks again for joining us today. Frank Wake, are you with us, Frank?
Good afternoon.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Frank Wake. I'm a private investigator here in Anchorage. I think by now everybody is on this committee has probably heard my name and read numerous documents that I've tried to put forth, and I just
they're part of the record, I might add.
Pardon?
We put them into the record. All the emails and letters we get going into the record.
Well, I don't know if that's a good thing, but thank you. A few days ago, State Senator McKinnon wrote in a commentary piece in ADN, quote, "A bill is an idea, a policy consideration to engage Alaskans in a discussion about their government and how a proposed idea affects people." So that is what this is, a discussion that starts with you and the committee. It is you who control this bill. We have offered our opinions, mostly negative, about the legislation, and not having seen any letters absent 2 brief and uninspiring emails, there are no other comments supporting the legislation than I am wondering who among you favor House Bill 9. I feel there are numerous and obvious problems with the costs given to the unknown projected costs levied by the Division of Licensing. The numbers are a big issue. It is an unknown based on an unknown number of potential licenses. So we all can spend time repeating what has been written by each of us in our letters. I trust, as you've said, that you've all read the letters and are aware of our opposition. So that, to me, is a valuable waste of time. As far as I'm concerned, there are other remedies to the transgressions and protection than licensing. Civil lawsuits and criminal charges for fraud and theft can be handled by local law enforcement. But I offer you an opportunity to engage in a dialogue on this issue with us. We are the people you are regulating. We would like to hear what your concerns are, other than public safety, which has all been covered, and we're happy to answer any questions with respect to your inquiries. I don't understand what the burning need is for this legislation. Are we overrun by PIs running around causing a need to license the entire profession? I haven't seen it in my 28 years. In my opinion, there isn't a need. There isn't a good reason, and this bill should stay right where it is as a policy consideration to engage Alaskans in a discussion with their government. Thank you.
Well, I can answer one question you made. Typically, we don't do that. We listen to your concerns, but I think everybody in the room is concerned about the size of the fiscal note. But thank you again for going to the LIO and joining us today. Dina Broughton.
Thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Dina Broughton. I own Justice Investigations. I've been a professional investigator in Anchorage for 10 years. I'm licensed in Anchorage, and my Fairbanks license is pending on the outcome of this bill. So I would actually count on those numbers that I hear in Fairbanks and in Anchorage. So I think the numbers out there are not accurate. I think all the information that I've heard today is inaccurate, and I fail to see how this bill is going to protect the public. There's licensure in Anchorage, and this event that happened to the Koenig family happened in Anchorage, and it didn't prevent that. And I don't see how this is going to prevent anybody from coming into the state and conning a family. What it's doing is it's placing a burden on the people who are here working and doing good work for the community. I live here and I work here, and people know me and they know what I do for a living. So it's pretty hard for me to con anybody since I'm public in a private way. And all of the databases that I have access to, you have access to them as well. Thank you that you're considering our profession. However, I don't think that it's being considered in the right light. Everything I've heard is about protection from us. And I'd like to support my colleagues who spoke before me. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you again for making the effort to join us. And Tony Cazzetti, are you with us, Tony? Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you again for calling in.
Yes, sir. My name is Tony Cazzetti, and I operate Paladin Investigations. I also have Paper Trail Business Services and Legal Research Service, which has somehow got into the phone book under investigators. I mainly do legal investigations which requires me to frequently have to go to the prison to interview prisoners. And the Department of Corrections is deliberately interdicting the services of a private investigator. And I hope that your office will place a provision in the requirements that once a person is licensed as a private investigator, that the state is not supposed to interfere with investigation. When you got to talk to a prisoner, they've been deliberately stopping it and not providing adequate investigation. And that is a serious factor because it's a constitutional issue when a prisoner hires his own private investigator that has nothing to do with an attorney. And I think that's got to be in that bill. And also, too, the investigators for the state and the investigators for attorneys, they're getting a free ride. And I think that's got to be examined. Also, too, every paralegal is an investigator, but not every investigator is a paralegal. So that's got to be taken into consideration. And thank you very much.
Thank you again, and your timing was perfect. We've got 3 minutes left before I lose my committee, and we've got one person left in the valley. Link Fannin, are you with us?
Yes, sir. I'm here, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you got the last 3 minutes.
Thank you. I appreciate your guys' time today. My name is Link, last name Fannin. I own Oracle Investigations. I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage here. I didn't receive this bill till 5:19 last night, so I don't know that that's necessarily you know, fair for the public to wait for input and then get a totally changed bill this late at night. Some of the I'm just going to try to start from the beginning. Some of the issues that you guys have heard here today is absolutely 100% inaccurate. And I'm not going to throw the word lie out there, but I will tell you it is not true. The first page, it looks like it doesn't have a title on it, and there's no pages to it, but I believe what it is a sponsor statement. It says, with this credential, an individual can now access 70 to 80% of restricted national databases that provide access to personal information. That's not true. To the chair, through the chair to Representative Ledoux, she had a question earlier about the DMV records. Anybody can go through Monsnick and get the DMV records. Now, that might be superfluous or a different issue, but again, it goes to against the fact that 70 to 80% of restricted national databases, private investigators are exactly that. They are private citizens. We have no law enforcement ability. We have nothing that a private citizen doesn't have. So anything in this bill, a private person could usurp, could do themselves. Who was it? It was Representative Josephson, who brought up the idea that individuals can surveillance. Anybody can sit and watch somebody. I mean, the stock, if you're committing a crime or something like that, that's a totally different issue. I have more problems with the bill. The fiscal portion of it, I think, is pretty extensive. But H. Bill 9, just again, on the sponsor statement, H. Bill 9, it says, H. Bill 9 is not a new concept for Alaska, nor the profession. It goes on to talk about the Municipal of Anchorage licensing, the City of Fairbanks licensing. These are common sense license. This is a background check. Hey, don't be a felon. You want to be a private investigator? Don't be a felon. It's not an extensive, you know, it was 12 pages. Now it looks like it's been cut down to 9 pages of all the things and restrictions that you can and cannot do. They want to protect the public from private investigators, but then we're going to exempt most of them. Now, I have the advantage that I used to be an adjuster for an insurance company called Unitrin Insurance Company. I handle personal injury protection cases. As a personal injury protection adjuster, what you do is you make sure that treatment is reasonable, necessary, and auto accident related, in the example of my case. That's an investigation. That's what you're doing. You're doing an investigation. So the public doesn't need to be protected against those people doing investigations, just other people doing different investigations. Makes no sense. What this is legislation looking for a problem. It's not well thought out. It has ambiguities in here that I'm not even sure that I understand. Let me give you page 6, line 8. You're in this if you fail to comply with an order issued by the department. Now, who knows what? I don't even know what that means. Who in the department? Who has the ability to do that? And what order are they talking about? It gives way far-reaching as far as government overreach. And at $50 a barrel oil, I think we have a lot of things in the state that we have to worry about. In fact, I appreciate your guys' time here today because I know you have a lot of pressing issues. Unfortunately, I know this doesn't affect your life, but it does affect our lives and our professions. Again, not enough time to go through this bill in 3 minutes, but I would like to voice my opinion that I strongly oppose it. It's not well thought out. It has a lot of problems, and it doesn't solve anything that is currently being proposed as a problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you again. And for anybody that's still online, the biggest stumbling block to this bill at this point in time is the fiscal note. And we're the first committee, and keep an eye on with your LIO, and as changes come in, I'm sure there are going to be some more comments this week, and they'll be posted immediately. And with that, I will adjourn at 2 minutes after 5. And thanks again.
Thank you.